welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Thank you for joining the Friday the 13th edition of NC Spin. We start by looking at late changes in our elections and ask why it took so long to get results. We also talk about an all-time high in coronavirus cases and discuss what it's going to take to get people to take this virus seriously. And we pledge to ask the panel to tell us something we don't know this week. Speaking of which, this week's panel includes Bev Perdue, former governor of North Carolina, Rick Henderson, executive editor of the Carolina Journal, John Hood, syndicated columnist and author, and Chris Fitzsimon, director of State's Newsroom. We'll begin our uninterrupted discussion after these brief messages from our underwriters. In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on health care costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever, and your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air, and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Let's begin the spin. You didn't hear much about North Carolina's election results since late last week, but election officials have been busy counting mail-in and provisional ballots, and late Thursday night, we got changes in final outcomes in previously uncalled contests. Rick Henderson, on Thursday, there were five statewide races on call. Late Thursday evening, the lead in the Chief Justice Supreme Court race changed from Paul Newby, who had been ahead, to Sherry Beasley, who overtook him on Thursday night. Now, we know that there's still lots of mail-in ballots that haven't been counted yet. But it looks like to me that part of what happened here was that these provisional ballots or these mail-in ballots followed the national trend and seemed to skew more Democratic. Is that correct?
Well, it's hard to say because as we're taping this show, the statewide canvas is not yet completed and has not yet been conducted. And so with the outstanding counties as of Friday morning, several red counties, if you will, including Union and Cabarrus hadn't been counted yet. And so we just don't know how that's going to play out. Plus, there are ballots that need to be cured, ones in which the voter had made some sort of error and had been contacted by the elections board to come out and correct that error to see if that would be accepted or not. So there's still something up in the air about this. But the bottom line for viewers is that when the canvas takes place, the candidate that is in the lead at the end of the canvas, if that candidate has more than, let's say, if it's Chief Justice Beasley or Justice Newby, if it's more than a couple of hundred votes, then a recount probably isn't going to change the outcome unless some lawsuit invalidates some of those ballots that were legally counted the first time around and were accepted the first time around.
And Bev, you appointed Sherry Beasley to the Supreme Court bench to start off with. Newby is saying that he's going to file protest in some of these election precincts against what happened there. But his main beef is that the Board of Elections itself changed and allowed votes that had been postmarked by the end of Tuesday, last Tuesday's vote, to be counted up through the 12th of November. So he's probably going to be going to court with this. From your experience, what do you think? Is he going to have much of a chance there?
I think that either one of the two candidates who becomes the winner will be challenged by the loser. I think that's the race is too important. It was too highly financed. And the position matters. I don't know if he'll win or not. The question needs to be adjudicated to stop the talk across the state. So we'll just see what we'll find out. But at the end of the day, I think whoever gets the vote total count will be declared the winner by the courts or by whomever arbitrates the decision.
Let's play this out a little bit, John. Let's suppose Justice Newby does challenge what the Board of Elections did, and the federal courts or the courts decide with him in favor of his protest, his challenge. How's that going to affect the rest of the outcomes of the elections?
Probably wouldn't, because the margins would have to be very, very tight. And it's important to remember that, first of all, Newby has already filed the protests, so that this has already happened. It's not speculative. He's already filed in Mecklenburg and Wake and a number of other counties. And it isn't just about the question of accepting mail-in ballots that are postmarked on Election Day. He's also arguing that some of these boards are accepting ballots that weren't postmarked on Election Day or have no postmark at all. So there's a lot of legal wrangling to occur. I think that Governor Perdue is exactly right that whoever ends up, if for some reason the final count shows that Newby is a little bit ahead, I think Beasley will look carefully at some of the legal issues that are still up in the air, different ones, of course, than Newby. But I think that we will not probably get as clear a picture about this race as will all the others.
Yeah. And Chris, as far as it goes, there was another Supreme Court race that was being contested. And Thursday, we saw that Lucy Inman conceded her race against Phil Berger Jr. and decided that she was going to call it a day. But she gets to go back to the Court of Appeals bench and serve there. I thought you couldn't run for an office and still hold an office. What's up with that?
Yeah, you can run for an office and hold an office. You just can't run for two offices. I mean, we have people all the time who run for an office and their term is not up. Usually we think of state Senate races or U.S. Senate races. That happens quite often. It was interesting that she said she would look forward to being a candidate in the future. I don't think we've heard the last of her either as a justice or as a candidate, but this was one of the races that was well outside the margins that could be affected by lawsuits or recounts or provisionals or anything else.
Or her seat on the Court of Appeals expires and is up for re-election in 2022. And I think
right.
What she was saying is one way or another, she's going to be on a ballot. Rick, on Tuesday, Cal Cunningham conceded his U.S. Senate campaign against Senator Tom Tillis. I think the question is, was the revelation about his marital infidelities the reason why he'd lost? He led in the polls all through this campaign. Was that what beat him?
Well, I think the way he handled the allegations once they came out had a lot to do with him losing. He was up around 6 or 7 points before the allegations arose. By the time that Election Day rolled around, his polling lead had dropped by half, so he was only up by about 3 points, which was well within the margin of error. And what he chose to do after making an initial statement saying that he accepted responsibility and said he did a bad thing was that he dodged the press as much as possible. He really didn't hold what might have helped him out a lot, and that is just to hold a press briefing somewhere where he just allowed himself to take everything that was thrown at him and see how he responded to it. And so he just didn't do that. And because of that, Tom Tillis and the people supporting Tillis were able to make the case that, look, this guy is afraid to tell the truth. He's afraid to talk about what happened. He's afraid to basically face up to himself and claim accountability when really has a paper-thin record. And
so, Bev, there are a lot of national Democrats that are very upset with Cunningham, saying that he essentially cost them the U.S. Senate. Would you say that's true?
No, and I don't think that they can say that legitimately. They're just whining. And I haven't heard them. Nobody has talked to me, and I've talked to Washington a couple of times this week. So I do think it was his race to lose. I do not agree with the polls. We've seen polls, again, this cycle be tremendously wrong. If I were a pollster, I would find a new way to poll and give it up.
Or find a new job.
The bottom line is he did what he did, and the voters responded in kind.
John, why did it take so long for us? I mean, we had some vote totals the end of last week, And then everything just kind of went quiet. And then we started getting totals again on Thursday. Why did it take so long this year?
Well, it's not the first time that we've had lengthy after the election counting events, and even ones that ended up in court. People may remember an ag commissioner race some years ago. There were other races that where this has happened. What happened here, though, there's an extra amount. Usually it's about provisional ballots, and it's about some other matters.
Right.
In this case, it's not simply about provisional ballots. And by the way, there were fewer provisional ballots because so many fewer people voted on Election Day. And you vote on Election Day and go to the wrong precinct, that's typically how you get a provisional ballot. But what happened here was the change in the law. Remember, the legislature had already changed the law to allow voters, even if they had a ballot, didn't come in on Election Day. If it was postmarked on Election Day, the legislature had passed a bill, I think Governor Cooper signed it, to allow for three extra days for those ballots to come in from the mail. What later happened was, in my opinion, a collusive lawsuit, but at least a lawsuit, that was settled by the state that created a much longer period for those ballots to come in. I'm not sure that would have mattered. We'll have to see if it matters even in the Chief Justice race, but it definitely delayed the vote count a bit longer.
No question about it. And of course, part of the reason why the State Board of Elections changed this was because of the jimmying that was going on with the U.S. Postal Service. Chris, another interesting development here. While the law requires mail-in ballots to have a signature, election officials admitted this week they didn't verify those signatures. They didn't bother to check them against the signatures that were on file. My question is, why even have that provision if you're not going to bother to check?
Well, I think most people believe when they sign it that they're signing it and they're telling the truth. And there has been, it's really important to think of North Carolina as a microcosm for the country. There has been no widespread voter fraud identified even by the Trump lawyers in any state yet that they have filed lawsuits. Now they're claiming, making these bizarre claims about the voting machines that the Department of Homeland Security has shot down. There's going to be errors. There's going to be human error. There's going to be other things. I thought it was really interesting that the Department of Homeland Security and others talk about this all over the country. This election was done as almost as fairly as we can do it. And by the way, the reason that we extended the Board of Elections extended the deadline was that we're in a pandemic. And if people voted on November 3rd and they were panicked, and they didn't know if they're going to go to the polls, then they had an absentee ballot. We should be doing everything we can within legal areas to make sure that people's votes are counted. That's really the point of a democracy.
Rick, Governor Cooper is going to be only the second governor in modern history, Jim Martin being the first, who is going to face two consecutive terms of having a legislature from the opposite party. Are there any signs that you think that relations are going to be better between the governor and the legislature this year?
It's possible. Now, I'm not sure how much it will be. I think part of it has to do with whether or not there's communication between at staff level or person to person between the governor and the legislative leaders about what issues are negotiable and which ones aren't. And for now, Medicaid expansion is off the table. The governor is going to insist it should be on the table, but it's off the table. And as I said 4 years ago on this program, it should be off the table because we're expecting a new health care plan from the incoming president. Well, we didn't get one. So,
good luck with that.
Yeah. However, I'm fairly certain that if Joe Biden indeed is the next president of the United States, that there will be negotiations because he's a very good horse trader. There will be negotiations with the U.S. Senate to bring forward some changes to the healthcare system.
Bev, I want to move on to another issue here. All of the polls showed, all the polls showed this was going to be and prognostication, this was going to be a blue wave. Well, it wasn't. Republicans had a huge day in North Carolina on Election Day. A lot of people are trying to do some introspection as to why Democrats didn't do any better than they did. What's your take on that? You ran under the banner for several terms as lieutenant governor and governor. Why didn't Democrats do better?
Well, Tom, I feel strongly that Democrats need to go back to their core message about the economy and about North Carolina and about progressive policies. I disagree with Rick. I think it's unconscionable that North Carolina doesn't have the Medicaid expansion. And if I were Cooper right now, I'd be talking to Berger about how you make that happen. I think the national message too, Tom, resonated in North Carolina. The rhetoric in Washington around socialism and around ban the police was just illogical rhetoric for a state like North
Carolina. But a lot of people obviously bought it.
Didn't believe it. Pardon me?
A lot of people bought it.
They did buy it, but that was just not a truth. Alexander, she doesn't rule the Democratic Party. She's one voice with her squad.
Chris,
Chris, let
me ask you, the one name we keep hearing over and over and over again is DHHS Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen. The speculation is she's either going to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, she's going to run the Center for Disease Control, or the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. What's your speculation on that?
Well, we should be happy that we have somebody that qualified that might be going to Washington to run things. I don't think she would go and take the same job she had, but who knows? You know, also, it's always important to remember, I think it's likely she'll go, but she's also a mother, a wife. She has kids. She likes it here. There's no way to know. I would be surprised if she didn't go. I think there'll be some other names pop up as we get closer to a Biden administration. And I think we should stop saying if Joe Biden's going to be the next president, by the way. Joe Biden will be the next president. We shouldn't be making that a condition.
Speaking of Secretary Cohen, at a Tuesday press conference, Governor Cooper and Secretary Cohen said North Carolina's on shaky ground in fighting the coronavirus. We've had many consecutive days of more than 2,000 new cases. In fact, we hit 3,000 one day this week. Our hospitalizations are an all-time high. Our percent positive rate is 7%. Governor Cooper said North Carolina was not going to relax further any restrictions, keeping us in phase 3. But he did reduce the number of people who should be in indoor gatherings from 25 to 10. Bev, after the election, the governor said he hoped politics was over and people would follow the executive order to wear face coverings. Do you think this is going to happen?
I hope it happens, Tom. I was somewhere yesterday in the East and nobody in the store had on a face mask. Nobody. I find it unconscionable. You know, back when I was lieutenant governor, we helped move the state toward a tobacco-free policy. And we ended up to convince people using just body bag advertisements. I wonder what it's going to take in North Carolina for all of us rank and file citizens to realize this is serious, it's real, it's not a fluke, and that yesterday 157,000 people in our state diagnosed positive.
You know, I was in your part of the woods last weekend down in Pamlico County. I went into a grocery store, and my wife and I were just about the only two people other than the workers there who were wearing masks. What is it going to take, Chris, to get people to understand that we need to do this? The elections are over.
Yeah, I wish we had the answer. Although, you know, it was only 10 days ago or so that the president of the United States told people the pandemic was over. It was turning the corner. Don't worry about it. We still have people and organizations saying masks don't really help that much. I think that, you know, we talked earlier about, you asked Rick what Governor Cooper and how the Cooper and Berger and Moore could work together. Here's one way. They could have a press conference this week saying we are now in the darkest days of the pandemic, but hope is on the way. We will have a vaccine, Dr. Fauci says, by April. Why don't we have a bipartisan public relations effort now to say, as I've seen people on Twitter say, you're not a real man if you wear a mask. That's literally a thought in some people, in some of the Trump world. And we still have super spreader events that have been held at the White House. We need a bipartisan, non-political public education effort, which would save thousands of lives until the vaccine arrives. It's still very dismaying to me that somehow this has become a partisan or ideological issue. And I do think the Trump administration largely is, and others are, to blame.
Rick, we also learned in this press conference that the largest numbers of new cases are coming from rural areas in the state, not the more populous urban and suburban areas of the state. What's the reason for that? Is it just that people aren't paying attention? They're not wearing masks? They're not keeping distance?
Well, I think you and Bev actually said it all when you said that you had been to places that were outside of the triangle, outside of the triad, outside of the largest population areas, and people are not wearing masks. They, for whatever reason, think that it either doesn't matter, it doesn't help, it's an inconvenience, it's not worth their time, and they should. They should do that. I mean, it's something I completely agree with Chris. It would be nice to have a unity message from the governor and the two legislative leaders saying, look, this is something that if you're wanting to, if you wish to continue to make a statement like this, that's all well and good, but guess what? It's not doing any good. It's not getting us any closer to reopening the economy further, to getting our schools back in, and that you need to take some precautions now. And I'm afraid that we have an awful lot of COVID fatigue, which is unfortunate, and not only unfortunate, but very dangerous.
Yes, it
is. And
so
people need to take this seriously, and I'm all for some sort of, very, very accelerated nonpartisan or bipartisan public relations
campaign.
Well,
that's a good point, because it appears to me the partisanship is getting worse in some respects, not better. Yesterday, Treasurer Dale Falwell came out and took another jab at Governor Cooper's management of the coronavirus, saying that he thinks the Council of State ought to have more input as to decisions that are getting made. What's your reaction, John?
I think that Falwell is absolutely right. I think that is required by the statutes already. I think that it would be a wise choice for everybody to have some kind of a process. Surely we don't believe that any governor has ever been given the power to have an unlimited emergency without anybody checking it forever. I mean, I know this isn't forever. My point is, legally, that can't be the right answer. And I think, actually, here's what I think. I think that if we had a Council of State, if they took the statute seriously and had the Council of State be required to weigh in on some of the things that Governor Cooper's doing, actually that would create more bipartisanship. I mean, after all, no one would want to be voting against restrictions and then having deaths go up or hospitalizations go up. I think it would be an accountability measure for everybody concerned.
Do you really think that, Bev? You managed the Council of State. You sat on the Council of State. This is a very, very partisan Council of State. Do you think Roy Cooper could get approval to do some of the things he needs to do?
In all due respect to my good friend John Hood, no. I think what you just said was partisan bickering. Roy Cooper has been elected for the second time, the chief executive of North Carolina. The Constitution and the statutes clearly make him the executive leader. There are parameters drawn around that power in the statutes when the General Assembly decided to do that. There is no such provision at this point in time that would mandate the governor in making a decision about the health and safety of North Carolina go to the Council of State, as good as some of them are, and get their consent.
Chris, let me raise this point. We know that there are a lot of people aren't wearing masks, going back to the mask thing for a minute. Letters were sent out to some businesses urging them to abide by and enforce the mandate for wearing masks. What are we going to do? Are we going to start fining people, businesses, and so forth if they don't wear the mask? This is the one tool, and the distancing are the tools that we've got right now until this vaccine becomes available.
Well, I don't think we have the manpower or the woman power or the capability to do all that. That's why, and I disagree with John as well, we've heard rhetoric from some Council of State members that masks don't work. Or we've heard criticisms of social distancing policies. We've heard all these things. I think the only thing that's going to work, I think we should have guidelines. We should even have rules or regulations. I don't know about the enforcement. That's the difficult part. But we have to have some bipartisan finally come to grips. The election is over. And, you know, just because you don't get caught every time you go 90 miles an hour on I-40 doesn't mean you should go 90 miles an hour on I-40. There are literally consequences.
But there are lots of people doing it.
Yeah,
I'll tell you that. There are lots of people doing it.
But if you get caught, nobody starts screaming and yelling about their individual rights because we all decided it was in the best interest of society not to drive 90 miles an hour.
Well, this is all a very pertinent discussion because there are many of us, including my family, that are having discussions about Thanksgiving plans. And with the new spikes that we are seeing now in the numbers of cases and hospitalizations, the secretary is urging us to keep gatherings, family gatherings, restricted to your own immediate members who live in your household. That's something we'll be talking about again on next week's show. Right now, for the first time in 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to ask the panel to tell us something we don't know. John Hood, I'm going to lead off with you.
People who are puzzled about how you could end up with Roy Cooper for governor, Donald Trump getting Republican vote, getting the vote for president in North Carolina, and Tom Tillis being reelected, all you have to do is look at the AP analysis after the vote. Trump got 53% of the vote of people over the age of 45. Tom Tillis got 52% of that vote. And Roy Cooper got 52% of that vote. It was the older voters disproportionately who split their tickets.
All right, 2 minutes left in show. Chris Fitzsimon, tell us something we don't know.
I'll give you a quick one. You mentioned the stats that the Department of HHS put out this week about the virus exploding or going up dramatically in our rural counties. And contrary to popular belief, it's not just old people. Roughly one out of four people hospitalized now for the coronavirus is under 50 years old.
Yeah.
So young people, people who are 35 and healthy, you're not out of the woods. We have to take care of each other. We have to use these public health measures.
That 18 to 49 age group is in fact, the largest group now getting cases. Bev Perdue, tell us something we don't know.
The election results will cause national broadband to be paid for and implemented by the federal government. I believe that COVID and the connectivity, the way people have learned to work at home or somewhere else other than the office, have underscored the tide of the economy and education, and broadband, just like water and sewer, is the answer.
Interesting. Rick Henderson, tell us something we don't know.
The least followed and probably most important Council of State race may well be Secretary of Labor, because you do have moves to try to limit the ability of independent contractors who drive for delivery services to stay that way. That's not going to happen under Josh Dobson.
Well, you've heard our spin on the issues of the day. To stay informed all during the week, sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, give your feedback, and read my weekly column. Visit our website, ncspin.com, or catch NCSPIN on Facebook. And while there, subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our podcast. Until next week, when we'll have more balanced debate for the Old North State, stay informed and watch out for the spin. In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on healthcare costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever. And your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.